The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
Welcome to Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 545. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined today and today only by Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
Hello. You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live as we do some Wednesdays at KOOP.org. Remember, if it's theater, it's on Off Stage and On the Air. Don't go away. Anyway, on today's show, it's Wednesday, December 4th, 2019. Today we have Ground Floor Theater and their show, Next to Normal. And of course, we will have news and views of the world of theater in Austin, in San Antonio, Chicago, New York, London, and points north. We will be right back. All right, I am burning down the
house. You are burning down the house, I know.
So, all right, well, this
Gabriel
is because
Byrne of you.
My time is a little crazy and I didn't check the music program. And so there was a cacophony of music.
You know what?
Cacophony.
You were burning down the house. It was a very perfect song, perfect
Not
moment.
Only was I burning down the house, I was David burning down
you
the house.
You were David. I know. See what I mean? There's so many ways
There's
to play
so
this
So many
right
things.
Now.
Yes, I did it. I did it. It's all me. Nicole Shiro, checking in with you.
I am here.
You are here. You were, before we got here, you were busy with Tracy Schultz doing an interview with Jimmy Moore.
Yes, J. Robert Moore is currently starring in the Santa Land Diaries as that naughty little elf crumpet. And Tracy Schultz.
So we call that the NL.
The
NLE.
NLC?
NLE.
Naughty Little Elf. Yeah.
But if you want to go, it's NLEF.
I was thinking Naughty Little Crumpet.
Whatever it's called. Anyway. Okay. Well, good. Yeah. So that's playing over at the Zach Theater. Is it open now?
It is. It's open now, running through the 29th.
Awesome. ZachTheater.org.
Correct. And
As
they say in the biz. And you'll be able to hear the interview with Tracy Schultz on Tracy's show, What's New?
What's new? How is the world treating you?
Lovely Lisa.
Okay. Let's introduce the folks
that
are...
How about you now?
Oh, very good. Let's introduce all the disembodied voices that we have here.
There's a lot of people. It's
we
a party
we have
here
a lot of people.
Today.
We have Brian Cheslick. Hello, Brian.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am good. We have a doctor in the house, Dr. Ellie Jarrett Shaddles. How are you?
I'm great.
And
thank you.
Doctor school.
And the microphone works. That's
Does
good.
Does it? I feel like Kelsey Grammer.
You look like Kelsey Grammer.
Thank you.
As we said, you have a face for radio. We have Carrie McGinnis. I'm kidding. She's beautiful.
Hi.
Hi. We have a Sandra May Frank.
Hello, I'm Sandra May. This is not really my voice. It's the interpreter's voice. Just imagine me to be more of a sultry voice than, you know, anyways, it's more of a Sandra voice.
And that voice that you're hearing is Sharon Plager. She can say hello, too.
Hello, too.
Awesome. So let's see what's on the agenda to talk about. Lots of crazy stuff.
I was going to say, it was a very bizarro, newsy week.
It was. Let's start with the Thanksgiving Day Parade. Did anybody watch that monstrosity?
I did.
I did.
Doctor, yeah. So that's good. I was about to say something crazy, but I decided against it. So what did we think about the Broadway offerings, which they stack on the very front these days, which is good. You don't have to watch it, the whole thing.
My problem is I sleep in on Thanksgiving Day, and I don't wake up in time to actually watch all of those.
Well, the good news is for me, I mean, I don't know about you, but I have DVR. I don't watch it at all. I go back and I fast forward and just watch the Broadway stuff.
Oh, see, I like the parade. Uh-huh. But it was so sad that they had to, the wind was so bad that they had to keep showing previous footage of the balloons that didn't make it. So they kept showing previous footage. Well, we were supposed to have this balloon, but he went down, and
so
I was sad.
I was a little disappointed with the Broadway offerings, I must say. But then again, I believe I say this every year, that I'm disappointed
just
with the Broadway offerings.
I think you say that
every year.
Yep. I got texts that said, I know they lip sync, but couldn't they at least try?
Oh my God.
And lip syncing was it was awful.
Particularly
so bad
this year.
Awful.
They should at least wear their microphones so that we go, are they lip syncing or not?
Well, I will give Hadestown had the musicians playing.
Sitting there, yes.
And sitting there.
Yeah.
That's something.
So that's something.
Yeah. Well, it would have been more helpful if the drummer actually hit the drums instead of stopping the drumsticks over the drums.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
No, I'm teasing. He didn't actually do that. But anyway, that's the Thanksgiving Day parade.
He's a really good Santa.
I actually think Hadestown.
I didn't get to that
one was the only one that I actually watched.
Well,
it's always good.
And Patrick Page wasn't there.
No, Patrick wasn't in it, but they keep doing that same song. I mean, I love Persephone. I love that song, but it's the same song that I'm like, come on now. Give
it's
me something
old
new.
So it's funny that we talked last week about, we had a little discussion, a little disagreement here because we're very, very controversial here on Offstage and on the Air about Christmas Carol and what, you know, that happens all around the country this year. And we were talking about, one of our guests seemed to think it was a cash cow for the theaters, that's how they make their money for the year because it's a guaranteed thing. Mm-hmm. And other people here in the studio thought that it was perhaps more of a Christmas spirit thing or a combination of both. Just and today, or just let's see, what's the date on this? Who knows what the date is?
It was like 2 or 3 days ago.
Who cares? But it's called The Business of Carol.
Mm-hmm. Business of Carol.
Uh-huh. And it talks about the Christmas Carol and all the different companies that are doing it around the nation. And so the Christmas Carol, the very first one was
done. This is the one from American Theater Magazine?
Yeah.
Actually, it came out as soon as we ended our radio show, okay. And I laughed and was like, they heard us.
Did you laugh? Did you hard?
I hard out loud. Maniacal okay. laugh.
Well, the first one was done in London in 1844, just after the novella was published. And it was done, it's like almost immediately when it came out, it was done. Dickens himself did over 100 readings of it.
Oh, wow.
So that's pretty amazing. And this thing just goes through and talks about all the different companies. There's pictures. Let me show the audience.
very historical.
Yeah. But one of the things it says at the very top of the article, it says, and again, this was American Theater Magazine. It doesn't have a byline of who wrote it that I see on this. But the photo is by Carolina Dulce.
Yes, it is.
Yes. Anyway, it says right at the very top, where did it go? Charles Dickens' story has long been the nutcracker of U.S. regional theaters. So I found it interesting. There's a couple of things I wanted to point out without going through things. One of the headlines says that the show virtually guarantees ticket sales. Mm. And then we have here, it also says, while it may be a box office bonanza, it's a huge cast. And
it's always a big cast. I mean, you can try to double cast it.
Except the one-person show versions.
Well,
they're slightly smaller.
You think?
So has anybody here done a Christmas Carol?
The
Muppet
I've seen
version
it.
Is the best one ever.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Jim Henson, you did a Muppet version?
No,
there's the movie, the Christmas Carol
never
Muppets.
Seen it.
Oh, Lisa, good. That's sad.
Jewish. Why would I see the?
Oh,
it's the Muppets. What's that have to do with anything?
Yeah. Not a huge Muppets. Fan of the Muppets. I'm okay with them.
The Muppets could be Jew.
Yeah, I know. Good. But the Nutcracker, Scrooge can't. Oi, oi, oi! Happy Hanukkah. Bah, humbug, my back hurts. Aww. Leave me alone. Okay. No. So, has anybody done it? Performed in it?
No.
Directed
no.
it? Musically directed it?
No.
High school? Oh.
I have.
Wait. Tell,
I was
Sandra
the ghost of Christmas Future.
Oh.
Oh, that's a fun role.
Oh.
So, show us. Can you show us the...
Oh, yeah. It was amazing. I got to stand up. And there was this really tall guy that I had to get on top of and stand over. And then we had this big cloak that was over the top of us. And then we walked on stage and had to balance that way. It was a lot of fun. It was
Did
awesome.
You have a big evil face?
Under the cloak, yes.
Oh, couldn't see your face?
No.
Bummer.
But you could feel me.
I feel you now. Let's see... I circle things that I want to highlight, but then I forget why I did it, so I have to reread it. Oh,
I'm gonna buy you those little post-it sticky arrows
except
for Hanukkah that you can.
Except I won't do anything with
you
them.
You can write on the arrow what it was
so
for.
So this is somebody that says that the play is just not fluff. There's meat to the story. He says there's also. Flexing of technical muscles that helps production shops and artists develop and grow. So lots of different things that happen. And, of course, It goes through all the different cities and what they're doing. I don't believe, to be honest, I started skimming towards the end because it's a long article. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Zach's version showed up here in this article, although I don't know why it didn't. But one of the, you know, there's, it's in the public domain, so you're not paying rights to it, and you can do whatever you want to it. So people do. And our own Zach does their version, which I actually like. So, and it says, yeah. So ultimately, most stagings of Christmas Carol have two ironclad similarities. Anyone want to guess what the two things are? They have two things that basically happen in all Christmas carols. Any guesses?
There's Scrooge.
Okay, that's sort of. That's Scrooge's redemption. That's partial answer to one.
And they have three ghosts.
Okay, so one of them is the staying true to Dickens' story.
Yes.
And the second?
Oh. I don't remember.
Singing?
Snow. It's got to have snow. The more snow, the better.
Personally,
that's what it says.
If Dickens had did over 100 readings of that himself, now I know why he's dead. I'm sorry. The story itself is boring, so when a theater can do something that's more different and interesting, like The Muppets, or honestly, the Zach production is right up there with The Muppets with me since they use modern music.
I will take umbrage on the story being bad. I like the story, of course.
Nicole knows that
Dickens is my favorite author.
It is. And you can see the original Christmas Carol Dickens manuscript at the J.P. Morgan Library in Manhattan. And it's just... And have a little cucumber and tea sandwich and hang
and
out.
You can also pay your credit card bill
so
there.
So lovely. No, it's an actual library.
I know. That was
mansion
called,
in the 20s.
We call that in the business
huma.
A joke.
It's a huma.
Who likes Johnny Depp?
Oh, I found
I
this
do.
Bizarre out.
No,
I know
you.
Where
who
you're
likes
going
Johnny
with
Depp?
This. I do.
I do.
Okay.
In certain situations.
Who likes
hot.
Michael? Who liked Michael Jackson?
I still like Michael Jackson. I'm not totally.
I'm
not.
Anyway,
torn. I'm torn. Exactly. I'm not going to give him the full boot yet.
Yeah. No.
Not torn at all. Not torn at all. But there's a new musical that is being produced by Johnny Depp, and it is called. Here's the title: For the Love of a Glove, an unauthorized musical fable about the life of Michael Jackson, as told by his glove.
Oh my God!
I saw this and I died laughing. And I this was me. How stoned was Johnny when he said, "Yeah, I love to produce The Love of the Glove."
So this is a puppet show.
I have never heard of that. I mean, of course not. Obviously,
nobody has. Well, a few people have. So this is written by a guy named Julian Nitzberg, which coincidentally was my sorority name in college.
Oh my God.
And he's written a lot of biopics for TV, but he saw this idea. He said,
"How do
they
you go
wanted...
from writing biopics on TV to writing a stage?"
Well, I'm
play?
I'm about to tell you this. Mm. A major this is a quote from him. A major TV network wanted me to write a Jackson movie, but the question came up about how to deal with the child abuse allegations. When the network and Nitzberg disagreed, he said, "How's this? Everything Michael Jackson has been accused of was actually been caused by his glove, which is actually an alien from outer space and feeds on virgin boy blood."
Oh boy.
I support that.
So the question is, how stoned was that person when they came
when
up
they
that
wrote
idea?
It, which I think it was a lot of stoned people going, "This is a great
right?
idea."
So I'm envisioning one character is this huge, shiny glove costume just dancing around on
stage.
I mean,
the glove's got to have a moment.
Right?
Well, the network took a pass on it.
Oh, I don't know why.
Maybe it's an ASL glove.
I like that.
Ooh, it's an ASL glove.
Yeah, you know, it's an ASL glove.
I love
glove.
That.
There you go. When you start casting, please pick deaf actors to add some ASL into the glove.
Sandra, I think they're still having auditions, and you could probably get a job as the ASL glove. Speechless. I've never seen
next
you
question.
Speechless. Speechless, exactly.
Never seen you speechless before. So the network took a pass on it. So Johnny Depp said yes.
Oh my gosh.
It's just sure, it's the strangest of strange. I was like, am I reading all of this correctly?
So the actors are perform with life-size puppets with the Jackson 5, obviously, but also Donny Osmond, Emmanuel Lewis, Corey Feldman, and Bubbles the Chimp. Because you know,
you can't leave Bubbles. If the glove is involved, so should Bubbles.
Yeah.
What would the OJ glove be like?
Oh my god.
Oh
well,
gosh, that's it a won't whole other.
It won't fit. It won't fit. All right. So I'm gonna switch gears here a little bit, and I have to, this is a, it's in the New York Times. I think it might have been today. It's written by Adam Langer, and this article was written so well, I think. I would suggest people to go out and read this article or go to offstageonair.com and we'll have a link to it. But this talks about a show called Buck White, which opened in 1969. It was a musical about basically racism. It was a musical based on the show Big Time Buck White by Joseph Dolan Tioti. I'm sure I'm misspelling that. But it starred one Muhammad Ali.
I was like, this is Muhammad Ali.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, when I read this, it was produced by the guy that produced Oh Brother, Zev Buffman, which he was just straight off of. He did a show called Jimmy Shine with Dustin Hoffman right before this. So this had great word of mouth. Muhammad Ali evidently is a wonderful singer.
Uh-huh. Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
It was like this great preview was great. Everything was so exciting. And then they opened. Oh, before that, there was a record deal in place.
All this stuff was happening, which was so crazy at the time.
Then
in
they
the context.
Opened and flopped immediately and closed 2 days later.
2 days?
Yeah, sorry, 4 days later.
Oh, that's better.
Double that. So this makes it easier.
This is a quote from Zev Buffman. "The last preview was the most astonishing theatrical event I ever lived through," said Buffman. "Ali was brilliant. Forget Harry Belafonte. Forget anyone who ever did Porgy and Bess. I've never seen anyone or anything like it. The way he captured the stage with a charisma that got people on their feet for 5 straight minutes. That was the preview. And then flash forward to, and this article takes you on this ride with it. It's written really well. And then it gets to the opening night where everything just, and I teared up reading this thing. Mm. So Buffman said, "The preview was so great, but then came opening night. Ali went on stage and he was somebody else. He went through the motions. The cast followed his tempo. There was no charisma. There was no standing ovation. I went backstage and Ali looked at me and said, 'Boss, we're in trouble, huh?' Buffman continued. I said, 'Tell me what happened.' He said, 'I fought my fight yesterday at the preview. I came to fight again tonight, but it was all done.'"
Oh my gosh.
That makes me sad.
And there's no there's hardly any record of this play happening anywhere. And it's about social justice movement done by African Americans at the time.
Interesting.
And it was followed in that theater by Gantry, which was a musical adaptation of Elmer Gantry, starring Robert Shaw and Rita Moreno, which opened and closed the same night, and so they tore down the theater.
Oh gosh!
But just a wonderful story, and they talk about this was after Ali his legal battle when he didn't go to Vietnam and he lost his ability to fight. They took his ability to fight away, so it was kind of like a comeback for him that didn't come. Here's a picture of him and the playwright and talking with stuff.
Show our listeners at Muhammad Ali.
I get there. I have to show everybody else first.
They're all smiling.
Here it is. Okay. So did anybody hear about this talk back that happened at Slave Play?
Yes. Yeah, or did you see it?
I did see it. Did you?
Yes.
No. So Slave Play, as most people probably know, is the play by, I keep forgetting his name.
I can see his young 30-something self looking at me right now, too.
Yeah, and you know what? I read the article, so I know it's here. Anyway, him. Oh, Jeremy O'Harris.
Thank you.
So they did a talk back, and this is a show that satirically shows racism at its best or worst, depending on your point of view. And they had a talk back, and this woman, they said presumably white, stands up and says, hold on, how is the performance that she just watched not, quote, racist against white people?
Oh, dear.
God. And then she goes on to talk about that, how she was a marginalized person and she's a rape survivor and she's single mother and everything. And this is one of the things for those of us in the social justice movement, we spend a lot of time talking about, you know, none of this stuff is to deny your own personal hardships, but to look at the bigger picture, you know, white heterosexual men tend to have more privilege than most. Mm-hmm. But Jeremy Harris, I just loved how he reacted to all this. First of all, he said, I never once said that you as a white woman were not a marginalized person. But if you heard that in my play, I don't know what to tell you. Perhaps read it or see it again.
Ouch.
And then he goes on to say, he says, but I think you've given us another really amazing play.
Yeah, but I was like, he turned it around, and that next quote was the best. I love that.
Even
yeah, that you,
the one I just
think
said?
He just gave us another really good, amazing play.
Exactly.
But talking about the talk back in general, it said, even slave play had to sit through a Thanksgiving dinner.
But, yes, they did. That was funny. I laughed.
So somebody took a phone video of it. It's on. It's
viral.
Every,
at this point.
Every 2 seconds is a beeped. It's an explicative. So you can't really understand what she says because everything she says is beeped. And she's yelling, and she left the theater. But also a very interesting article to read. And Jeremy O'Harris is just amazing. And he wrote it. He also said he spent a lot of time saying, you know, this play is about these six people and their experience. It's not about you.
No.
Which is what people say to me all the time.
Which is interesting because it's what he says in his interviews, too. He had a really good interview like a week ago, maybe. I'll have to find it and send the link. Maybe we can post it. It was on CBS Sunday Morning, I think, or Sunday with Willie Geist. It was one of the Sunday morning shows. Hmm. And I was flipping around and it happened to just be coming on, so I was like, oh, and it was a really good interview.
I've heard a lot about this, about the show itself.
Oh, it's amazing from what I hear. Mm-hmm. I really would like to see it.
Everybody I know that has seen it has enjoyed it thoroughly.
I don't know if enjoy, I don't know if enjoy is the right word. It's moving.
But you can, I think I can enjoy something that has made me feel uncomfortable and is saddening and disturbing. I still can enjoy that because it made me feel those ways.
True. Mm-hmm. I always say any type of show that makes you feel some sort of an emotion that is not typically welcoming
is
a great show. Mm-hmm. It's a great
Uncomfortable
show.
Is good
pulls
to
that
me.
Out of you.
Yeah.
I'll just say that Sandra is nodding in agreement. That's my job. I'm now a certified ASL interpreter because I did that.
Lies.
It's about time. Now everybody will give me a less hard time for my terrible. There was an article. They always do a best of in the New York Times, and there was an article for the best of 2019 with Ben Brantley and
Jesse Green,
as well as Elizabeth Vincentelli and what's her name? The other one, Laura Collins Hughes. And I'm not going to go through this, but it's a very interesting and eclectic set.
I was about to say it was really eclectic.
And little to no musicals.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of off-Broadway material and things like that. So it's there'll be a link on our site to see that. But of course...
there's a lot of good off-Broadway offerings. So, I mean, I get it.
It's an incredible time for theater. It's an incredible time for television. Mm-hmm. America Utopia was on everybody's list. Heroes of the Fourth Turning, the Will Arbery thing is on everybody's list. Slave Play, of course. Octet. The only musical really that made it was Moulin Rouge. They talk about going from things like Slave Play, which is heady, to Pablum, which admittedly is Moulin Rouge. It's just candy. But there's nothing. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, in my opinion. There's also
no, because that means there's something for everyone at the theater.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised Hadestown didn't make that list.
It didn't.
They just got
number one on the Tumblr too.
Time Magazine too.
Hamilton
just rated them number one.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Good point. Mm-hmm. Don't know why. Okay. We're gonna do that. Just Theater Olympics. That's all I'm going to say. Go on our website. There'll be a link. Theater Olympics. It's been going on for a long time.
I was like, it's been going on for a long time. But you say the word Olympic, and I get crazy excited.
I know, but it's not a competition. Actually,
I'm going to Tokyo Olympics. No, it's not. And I've been
wait a second.
Down.
All of theater is a competition. Everything about theater is a competition.
True. Well, we talked about Tumblr, and I just wanted to point out that there was this top 15 musical theater Tumblr fandoms. I don't really know what Tumblr is, but I did go through this, and it showed a lot of different memes.
I don't either, Lisa.
Yeah. Well, it's evident by the shows that are on here. They tend to be millennial in feel, like The Prom, Wicked, Beetlejuice, Newsies, Dear Evan Hansen, Falsettos, which I think is an interesting one because
I just was shocked on social media that it was
Hadestown
that beat
Hamilton.
I mean, I think it's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like
the show 20 years old now.
Stunning. The show
it's incredible.
Is stunning.
So, I mean, I can argue that forever though, Lisa, but The Lion King is still just as good as it was 20-something years later.
That is arguable.
And Hamilton will be like that and still going like...
Yeah, but
I'm actually surprised that Beetlejuice made that list.
Beetlejuice has made bank at the box office. Beetlejuice is like this crazy cult following. It had one of the best weeks in the box office last week. I don't understand it, but you know what it is? It's a cult following for that character in the story.
And so here's what...
That's true. That's a good point.
I mean, I'm deaf and I can't stand his voice.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to table that argument because we're running out of time. But the number five on the list... tell me if you guys had heard of this. I have not until today. The guy who didn't like musicals. Anybody ever hear of that?
Yes. I thought we talked about that on here.
No, I've never.
So
that guy died, right?
It's
somebody killed him, right?
well, I'll read you the blurb on its website. It's in Los Angeles. Everything in Hatchfield seemed normal until people began singing. Then they began dancing. And now, a musical pandemic is sweeping the entire city. It's up to Paul, an average guy who doesn't like musicals, and his friends to stop the musical apocalypse and fight for humanity's future. It's a horrifyingly new comedy musical in Los Angeles at Starkid Productions.
So it's basically like the musical episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Perhaps. I'm going to say yes. I've never seen that.
That's
but...
exactly what happened on that episode.
Okay. Oh, Buffy's great.
Well, let's go.
I'm a Buffy fan.
Yeah.
Let's go out and listen to a little bit of that. We'll take a little break and come right back. Okay, we will be right back. Stay seated.
All right.
It's a show stop.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
Hello.
Hello. We've been having a great conversation. And before we get started with talking about Next to Normal, which is a co-production with Ground Floor Theater and Deaf Austin Theater, I'm going to ask the co-artistic director of Deaf Austin Theater to give me a number between 2 and 53.
Ooh, hard. 2 and 53.
Yes.
Let's go with my age, 38.
Here it is.
Hi, I'm Caressa Cameron, Miss America 2010, and you are listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin 91.7 FM.
Okay, Caressa Cameron again. She's very popular here on the show.
She does pop up a lot.
So let's talk to the people from Deaf Austin Theater and Ground Floor Theater and their production of Next to Normal. I'm going to reintroduce everybody here because they are our only guests today. We have the co-director and the co-artistic director of Deaf Austin Theater, Brian Cheslick.
Hello, hello, hello.
And we have the co-musical director, Dr. Ellie Jarrett Shaddles.
Hello.
We have one of our cast members, Dr. Carrie McGinnis.
Hey, now,
Esquire.
Wait a second.
Yes.
I am soon to be a doctor.
Oh, but you're not yet.
One more year.
Okay.
That's so called doctor school.
Let me introduce Brian Cheslick. And we have Sandra May Frank, doctor. and then I will also introduce Sharon Plager, who's here with us. She is the certified ASL interpreter that is interpreting for Sandra May Frank today. Hi, Sharon.
Hello.
I'm actually going to turn the reins of the interview over to Nicole Shiro because I kind of have a vested interest in this as I am the co-director of this show as well as the co-artistic director of Ground Floor Theater.
What if I say no?
Then I'll just do it myself.
No, of course. So, well, welcome. Hello, everyone. Thank you all for being
Hi.
On today.
Thank you.
So, this is kind of exciting. Lisa, Brian, you two got together and decided to do a show both in ASL and English. What were your thoughts on that? How did this come about?
What were you thinking?
Yeah.
Well, from a Ground Floor Theater standpoint, this is something that I've wanted to do from back in the day. When we opened in 2015, we did a production called Parade, which had a cast of 19. And I had this idea of doing something similar to Deaf West that they had, I believe they were about to do or they did. I don't know, Sandra, you were in Spring Awakening. What year did that happen? Oh, I know when you closed in 2016 in January.
2014 to 2016. Yeah. So we had three different runs.
Yeah. So I was really impressed with what I saw about Spring Awakening. I wanted to do something similar, and I decided that I was going to do that with our very first musical, which is Parade. And I said, well, I need to start going about figuring out how to do that. And I talked briefly to the folks at the School for the Deaf, and then I found this wonderful person, Sharon Plager, who came in, and she said, you need 18,000 interpreters, you need all these. And I finally realized that I'd bitten off more than I could chew. And so this was something that I have wanted to do for a while, and we chose Next to Normal because it's such a great piece. It's got such a powerful message. It's got beautiful music. It does not have a huge cast, so we're able to double cast it. And Brian and I had talked a year or so ago about doing a co-production with Deaf Austin Theater, and then we were... Well, you tell the story about how we came up with this around the table.
Well, after Fun Home, could you pull me in for Fun Home to help with Sandra, because Sandra was cast in that also. So I was.
Sandra's going to do everything we do from now on.
Sandra does it all. She does it all. Right?
You just leave her in the back. She doesn't leave the theater, really.
No, she doesn't.
She doesn't. She lives it, breathes it. Anyway. Anyway, after that, we started discussing. Deaf Austin Theater is still very, very new. So for our first big production, we are very, very lucky to be partnering with a theater like Ground Floor Theater. Lisa, me, and your co-director or co-artistic director, Patty Neff, met in a coffee shop, started discussing, throwing out ideas. I remember one I threw out was the last 5 years.
Yes, you did.
Mm. And then we sort of thrown them, and then I think one of us, might have been me, I don't know.
I'm going to just say you.
Probably me. Throughout Next to Normal, because it's always been a favorite of mine. Love that show so much when I saw it on Broadway years ago. Threw it out, and we kind of perked up a little bit. Our ears were all perky. Our eyes were all sparkly. And then kind of looked at each other and did a little research and then decided, let's do it. Go big or go home.
Yep. Yeah. So we've decided we double cast this. Both Brian and I decided that we didn't want to have one character as the main character and another person as just the shadow, providing either the voice or the American Sign Language. So all the roles are being shared. And in the studio today, we have Sandra May Frank, who is sharing the role of Natalie with Mariana Tolomash, who is a hearing actor, and obviously Sandra is a deaf actor. So, Sandra, tell us about the role of Natalie.
So the role of Natalie is really powerful in the show. Well, so I knew about Next to Normal before I got casted. It reminds me a lot of the story of like Rent and Next to Normal and kind of the stories that go along with them. And so when I found out that Ground Floor Theater and DAT were doing Next to Normal, I realized I have to be a part of this. I knew inside of me. I was like, oh my gosh, I was so excited of, oh, vulnerability. I felt like it's just a vulnerable role. And I always love that kind of character. And being able to work with Marianne has been wonderful. We have connected as one. We share the same thoughts. We share the same emotions. Our heart is in there for this character.
And I was going to ask you that. When you're working with another person and playing the same role, How do you find that connection? Is there just kind of a moment of, oh, or you have to work to get there?
With Marianne, it just happened. I'm not exaggerating. We both had a certain goal. We both understood what the story was about. We understood how to work with one another. She, you know, she's not even graduated high school yet, and she's not even into the theater world completely yet, but we had this connection that was amazing for this character.
This magic.
And there was no hard work with it for she and I.
It's incredible to
watch
the two
really,
of them work.
Really amazing.
It's kind of funny that you, that connection, because really within the first or second week of rehearsal, I remember Lisa and I called everybody to come up, and you guys were deep in discussion, so we had to like wave across the room to get you to come. Both of you start running across the room. Sandra, you as the deaf person, you actually vocalized "sorry" at the same time Mariana, who is hearing,
I remember
didn't
that.
Vocalize. She signed "sorry." So you're like finishing each other's communication. It's amazing.
Yes, exactly.
So Carrie, you play the role of Diana, who is Natalie's mother.
Yes.
I guess we should say, well, Brian, why don't you tell folks, give them the nickel tour of what the story is.
Ooh,
without giving anything away.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Spoiler is a rock musical. It's representative of any American family, set in contemporary times, about a family struggling with mental illness.
Yeah.
Bipolar disorder, and how the family keeps living every day and how they survive every day. You've got the father who is trying to keep the family together, the mother who is trying to keep herself together, the neglected daughter who is trying to basically graduate early and get away from home.
Or get her parents to acknowledge that she exists.
Yes. Yeah.
I was about to say her the hello, I'm
and
here.
And the son that's kind of doing the same thing.
It's just every character has something that you can relate to and that will just basically stab you in the heart.
So Carrie, Liz, turning directly to Diana, who is the central figure around the mental health issues that the family is dealing with. How tell us what it's like to do the role. You're also sharing it with Meg Rose, who is playing Diana from The Deaf. And we should say that two of the characters in the play are deaf, and those characters are Natalie, played by Sandra May Frank, and Diana, played by the deaf actor Meg Rose, and Carrie is working in partnership with Meg Rose to play Diana.
Yeah, I've always loved this show as well, and then when Adam Roberts told me how you were doing the show with Deaf Austin Theater.
Adam Roberts, co-musical director.
Like Sandra, I said, I have to be a part of this because I studied speech and hearing sciences with an emphasis in deaf education in college. And so I learned ASL a long time ago, very rusty now. But I said, these are two things that I'm so passionate about. This musical, which speaks to mental illness, which is very close to my heart. I've lost people in my family and friends to mental illness. And I just wanted to tell the story, and then the ability to tell it together with Deaf Austin Theater is just beyond my wildest dreams, an experience that I wanted to be a part of. Working with Meg Rose is just such an experience because we share a lot of similarities. We share our motherhood. We share being partners. We share all these things that are in common with Diana. And then together we get to play this dichotomy of the various cycles that she goes through in her bipolar disorder throughout the show. And getting to play that with another actor, and especially with another actor just as talented and signing so beautifully as Meg Rose, is just a totally new theatrical experience for me. We actually get to expose and tell a story that you can't tell by itself in ASL, and you can't tell by vocalizing English and music. We get to play off each other. We get to show something that's happening inside our brains by looking at the other actor, which is just so new and different, and I'm just really excited to be a part of it.
Awesome. Well, I want to talk in a second about some of the issues around the music and working with both hearing and deaf actors, but before we do that, we're going to hear some music, aren't we?
Ooh.
Brian, do you want to set this song up? We're doing I Miss the Mountains. Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm
So I Miss the Mountains is a pivotal moment in Diana's journey to find herself. She's gone through treatment, medications that have made her stabilize in her emotions to the point where she is an emotional zombie. She feels nothing. And this is the moment when she decides to take control, take back her life, and express how she misses feeling. She misses her old self. And she just says, you know, no more medication. I'm done. And she flushes them all. It's a beautiful ballad that is just with the ASL and with the English together and having two powerhouse actresses performing at the same time. It's tearful and it's just spine chilling.
And the way Meg signs the song with Carrie singing it is just so emotional and visual. Even for those of you that don't understand ASL and maybe you think that music's not possible for a deaf person, this is my seventh musical that I have been in, and you can sign something. It's about the story. It's about the poetry. It's about telling what you want. It's about feeling the music with our heart. Now, I can't hear the music. I hear absolutely nothing, but I can do a musical. It doesn't matter whether you're hearing or you're deaf. It's about talent. It's about coming together, and it's about making it show, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Awesome. Well, let's listen to this. This is Carrie McGinnis doing I Miss the Mountains from Deaf Austin Theater and Ground Floor Theater's production of Next to Normal.
There was a time when I flew higher, was a time the wild girl running free would be me. Now I see her feel the fire. Now I know she needs me there to share. I'm nowhere. All these blank and tranquil years, seems they've dried up all my tears. And while she runs free and fast, seems my wild days are past. But I miss the mountains. I miss the dizzy heights, all the manic magic days, and the dark depressing nights. I miss the mountains. I miss the highs and lows, all the climbing, all the falling, all the while the wild wind blows, stinging you with snow and soaking you with rain. I miss the mountains. I miss the pain. Mountains make you crazy. Here it's safe and sound. My head is somewhere hazy. My feet are on the ground. Everything is balanced here and on an even keel. Everything is perfect. Nothing's real. Nothing's real. And I miss the mountains. I miss the lonely climb, wandering through the wilderness and spending all my time where the air is clear and cuts you like a knife. life. I miss the mountains. Hi, I miss the mountains. I miss my life. I miss my life.
Well, I think we picked a nice one to do. That's such a beautiful, beautiful song. What a great job. So let's talk a little bit about the music. So clearly while this music is going and has Sandra so wonderfully said that we're signing along with this at the same time, and sign singing is such a beautiful art, but it brings a particular challenge to a musical director and an orchestra at times, doesn't it?
Very true. Yes, absolutely.
Tell us about that.
Well, I mean, what we want to do is we want to be respectful of everyone's interpretation and the way they present their performance. And with music, there's a very rigid kind of timing. But with what I've noticed with signing, it's fluid. It's beautiful. You have to work with the timing. And so part of the challenge has been that we've gotten to explore musical timing. And oftentimes, like with Diana, with Meg Rose, you know, when Meg Rose is ready to begin the song, that's when we begin the song, as opposed to somebody giving a downbeat and they have to go with us,
right?
Which I think is really exciting and actually kind of groundbreaking. I mean, and fun to experience.
It has been a wonderful challenge to deal with all of that. I do want to just share one other thing. As I was looking up the music for the show, I just came across this. So just listen to this for just a second.
Sarei perfetto per te. Sarò anche pigro e chiuso e spesso fumato, vabbè. Ma sarei perfetto.
Okay, obviously that was not the English version. So we're not the only one doing multi-language versions of this. That was the Italian version. There's also next to normal Das Musical as well.
I was like, is there Das Musical? I want to say also musical. It was done in Japanese.
Yeah, but it sounds Ooh. So beautiful in Italian, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, a lot of things sound beautiful.
I was going to say, it's that romantic language for you.
Yeah.
Well, we're so out of time for this section. Does somebody want to tell folks when we open?
All right. Sandra, why don't you go ahead and...
And how long do we play, Sandra?
December 21st.
So we close on December 21st. For more information, you can go to groundfloortheater.org or deafaustintheater.org, and you can get all sorts of information about the show. So thank you guys for being on the show.
Thank you all for coming on today.
Thank you for having us.
Hopefully some of you guys can stick around for backstage. We can learn a little bit more about you. That would be groovy. And then we'll take a little break and we'll come back. And I think we're just going to have time for Today in Theater History.
You know why? It's Today in Theater History.
But not yet.
Today, soon. But,
so we will go out with another song from Next Normal, My Psychopharmacologist and I. And that was Ground Floor Theater and Deaf Austin Theater's production of Next Normal, playing December 5th through 21st at Ground Floor Theater. For more information, groundfloortheater.org or deafaustintheater.org. And we will be right back.
My psychopharmacologist and I.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Hello, this is Nicole. I am here with Lisa.
Excellent. We just got finished talking to the incredible cast and creators of Ground Floor Theater and Deaf Austin Theater's Next Normal. And we're just going to run right into Today in Theater History. I do want to just point out, I saw this...
Stuff happened? Today in theater history, happened?
Stuff happened. But two things I want to talk about. It's before we get to that, it's the Austin Puppet incident is this weekend.
Ooh.
And so you can get information about that right now at glasshalffulltheater.com. But, you know, puppets are all the thing.
Puppets are
these
cool.
Days.
Oh, I thought you said putt-putt. I was like, how is that related to theater?
That would be great.
Puppets.
And then I just also wanted to point out, so we have a lot of improv theaters here, and we don't talk about them a lot on this show, so I thought I would just highlight at the Hideout Theater, they're doing a improvised musical called the Hallmark Holiday Musical.
I was like, it's the Hallmark Holiday Musical. I laughed at this theme.
Yep, so those are things to see. Now it's time for Today in Theater
Today
History.
Today in Theater History? Yes. What happened?
Many things.
Tell me.
Brian will remember back in 1860.
That was a cold year, Brian.
Oh, I know, it's hard. That's the birthday of Lillian Russell. She's known as the epitome of the Gilded Age female sex appeal. She did musicals like Whirligig, Fiddledy-Dee, Hoity-Toity, Twirly-Whirly, and Whoop-Dee-Doo.
There was a lot of woohoo.
Okay. Yeah. Also on this date, 1906, Douglas Fairbanks starred in The Man of the Hour by George Broadhurst. And I'm only going to go on the record as saying...
He went Broadhurst somewhere.
Broadhurst Theater must be named after him.
Yeah, he went somewhere. Yep. He made it.
He made it. Let's see, 1986, we're just going to jump from 1906 to 1986. Broadway Bound opened at the Broadhurst Theater.
Really?
Yes. And that was one of Neil Simon's autobiographical shows. It ran for 756 performances and had a cast including Linda Lavin, Phyllis Newman, Jason Alexander.
I love Linda Lavin. Agreed.
Who doesn't?
Alice, still everything. Yep. Yeah.
Well, a mere 11 years later, Linda Lavin starred along with Harris Yulin, George Hearn, and Sophie Hayden. And Natalie Portman. Directed by James Lapine.
Mm-hmm.
Diary of Anne Frank.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Or, as we call it, The Diary of Anne Frank.
Yes.
I'll just call it the same thing everybody else does. In 2007, Tracy Letts' August Osage County won the Tony for Best Play that year, which I've not seen on stage. I could not sit through the movie.
She doesn't like the movie. You remind us of this every time.
Have you read the script?
I haven't. And I'm sure
I said, read the
after reading the script, this is on my list. I want to do it someday. Saw the movie. Love Meryl Streep, but...
Yeah, I'm with you. This was also 2016 when Dear Evan Hansen opened. Mm. Pasek and Paul's big hit. Which is in Austin next week.
Yep, we will be found. We will be found.
We will be found.
And there's they just announced a new Evan Hansen going into the cast.
They did indeed. And then just 2 years ago, SpongeBob SquarePants, the musical.
Which is on Nickelodeon on December 7th, if you are
under
interested.
Under a different name.
In watching SpongeBob SquarePants, it will be on broadcast on Nickelodeon and a few other channels. I forget the other ones, but that's the main one. December 7th. David Bowie wrote a song for that. And I love me some SpongeBob. He is a naughty, naughty little sponge.
I'm the sort of person, a theater person. I love original works, original things. Mm. When you take something
it's
like SpongeBob.
But here's the whole thing. It's not the cartoon looking that you think it is. It may be the characters and stuff, but it's not
Brian,
the same.
You could be okay with both.
But you have to
you?
Make theater for everything. Yeah.
That's like taking, like, what have they done? They're taking Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter. I am the biggest Harry Potter fan. Everybody will tell you that. But I don't want to see a musical Harry Potter.
Yeah, but they do have the Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, yes. A mere 6 hour.
Mere 6 hours, if you have nothing to do.
Play, if you have nothing else to do, which isn't doing great at the box office right now.
I can't imagine the Lord of the Rings as a musical. I mean, I love the Lord of the Rings. I know in my heart of hearts, but I can't imagine it to be a musical. If you're thinking about making that, please don't. Just don't.
Well,
don't.
It could be campy like Silence of the Lambs, the musical, that. Which is really good.
Oh very, no. Very
oh,
good.
Even though it's so bad, it's so good.
I know a song.
Okay. Okay, so bad. It's so good.
Okay, it's my show. Silence the Musical is trash.
It's so
period.
Bad. Thank it's so you. Good.
No, it's not so bad. It's good. It's just plain bad. Anyway, but we will agree to disagree on that one. Well, I want to thank everybody for being here with us on the show.
Yes.
We don't have. Oh wait, no, we do have to take a break. So we're going to take a break and we're going to come right back. We're going to listen. Oh, no, we don't need
no,
to. We
don't.
Already did.
I was like, we never did mind. All of our stuff.
We did all
we
of our.
We were good girls today.
We did. It's not often. But thank you guys so much for joining us here. Nice, lively group. I feel like I know you.
Just a little bit.
Stop acting, Lisa.
Okay.
If you're listening on the terrestrial radio, Austin Monitor News is next. If you're listening on the podcast, stick around for Backstage at Offstage, where we learn a little bit more about some of these incredible people. Remember to like us on the Facebooks and all the other social medias. And subscribe to the podcast by going to
offstageonair.com. Just enter your little name in the mailbox and the little box on the right, and voila, we appear each week in your mailbox.
And I thought I printed out what this is, and I don't know what it is, but this is from a show called All Right, Mrs. Albright. Oh, it's another puppet show.
Oh,
okay. And you can see a little bit on YouTube, and it's called Don't Fall in Love with an Alien. We'll see you next week, everybody.
All right.
But don't fall in love with an alien.
Well, the curtain has just come down on some people don't like this show, the musical. The story of Lisa Sheps, who just doesn't like anything, and writes about it and sings about it. So we've left the stage door. We're standing out here by the dumpsters. And with us, everybody of the show has joined us for our backstage. So I'm going to reintroduce Brian Cheslick. Hello.
Hello.
Get right up on that microphone, please. And
hello.
Carrie McGinnis.
Hello.
And we have Dr. Ellie Jarrett Shattles.
I'm listening.
And we have Sandra May Frank.
Hey!
And we have Sharon
That's
Plager.
Not my voice that you're going to be hearing. My name is Sandra May Frank, and this is the interpreter's voice you're hearing.
And her name is Sharon Plager. So, Sandra, I need to talk about you. If all of ground floor theaters, and I'm assuming Deaf Austin Theater shows, are what I like to call all star, no star, but you've got some really incredible credit under your belt, starring on Broadway and doing lots of films and everything. So, how did you find your way into this business of theater?
I've always wanted to be an actress since birth. Everybody tells me that I can't do something, so then I go ahead and do it. If I grew up wanting to sing or take piano class, my piano teacher in elementary school literally said, well, you can't hear, but you're just going to have to learn how to do that. And I was like, okay, that's it. I got music. And I started understanding the concept of music in elementary school. I could see the music. I could read the music. And I appreciate my teacher telling me that because she's the one that helped me to do that. But you know, being a full-time actor, writer, director, I want to do more. I want to be able to expose other deaf people that they can do it also. Mm-hmm. I don't speak, I don't hear, but I sign. ASL is a wonderful opportunity to expose people to the world, expose people to what people with disabilities can do. We are everywhere, TV, film, theater. Anywhere that we're not, we need to be. We need to be everywhere.
So let me ask you this. One of the things that I learned in working with ASL performers, or ASL in general, is American Sign Language is a whole different language than English. It's got a different syntax. Everything is different. So when you come into a show as maybe you're the only deaf performer and working with an English script, what kind do you have to take any other steps that a hearing actor wouldn't have to take to prepare for the role?
So typically the show will have an ASL master, and the ASL master's job is to read the script and to translate it for the deaf actors into which signs should be used for which lines. I am an ASL master, and if I have a show that doesn't provide one, then they will give me the script a month ahead of time, and I will go through and translate the script into ASL. It's not like just reading the English words and translating it into ASL. You actually have to take the English words, translate it, the grammatical structures of it into ASL in order to be able to sign it.
It's a lot of work.
That's a lot of work.
Yes.
So do you remember what your first play was?
In high school, Crimes of the Heart.
Okay.
That was my very first play.
Awesome.
And you smile big while you say it.
I'm surprised that I remembered it. It was so long ago. But then I didn't really expect theater to be what I was going to do full time until I went to college. And I went to Gallaudet University and I got into theater and to acting. And it wasn't until Spring Awakenings that I realized, oh, wow, I can do this full time. Okay, great. And so this is what I do. I love musicals. And I want to do more of them.
And Brian, you went to Gallaudet as well, did you not?
I did, actually. That's where I met Sandra.
I was going to ask if y'all met in school.
Did you know each other at school?
And have you performed together?
For Deaf Austin Theater, we performed together in variety shows, yes. But I remember for one show at Gallaudet, you were my ASL translator for Lisa Strada, correct?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's amazing to watch the two of you be together because clearly there's a connection. And so, Sandra, I know you do a lot of film and television, but do you have a wish list for theater? Is there anything that you want to do?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, she does.
Wicked. I want to be Elphaba, and it will happen.
Yes.
Have no doubt.
I have no doubt,
You'd make an awesome Elphaba. And I think you'd look good in
green. Oh, I know I would.
Well, that's awesome. So I'm going to just switch gears and talk to Ellie.
Oh.
What's your story? Hi. So you, I know you have all your like doctorates and degrees and stuff in vocal singing and opera Have you ever seen or done André Chenet?
I have seen it. I have not done it.
That
Is
was
that
my
your favorite?
First. No, it was my first. And I took a long break after that.
It's an interesting first.
It was not a good opera.
I was going to say, that's not a good starter. Just like Rigoletto.
So have you, what was your, how did you find your way into musical theater?
Well, musical theater has always honestly been my passion, and I started playing the piano when I was very young and singing as well, and I grew up in a very repressed household, so I was only allowed to sing Amy Grant and Sandy Patty and that kind of stuff. But as I got older and went to high school, I got to sing top 40s and musical theater stuff. And then I went to Baylor and they had this musical theater group called Showtime with an exclamation point. And I was an opera major, but I hated my voice teacher. And so I went into this musical theater thing to kind of piss him off. And I loved it. I loved the movement. I loved the freedom of the singing. I loved that you could dance and sing. I love parts of opera, but it can be very rigid. And that's why I love musical
It's interesting.
Theater.
It seems like different disciplines. I know that when I was in college and I went to North Texas State University or University of North Texas, and my teacher made me sing classical, legit stuff like Tulo Sai. And I said, no, I want to do show tunes. And, but it's it comes from a totally different headspace.
Totally. That is exactly it. And I get a lot of students from UT who come to me for voice lessons who've taken a voice class and have been forced to sing classical repertoire when really they wanted to work on contemporary musical theater or even golden age musical theater. And the wonderful thing about this is it's the same, you're using the same instrument, you're using the same voice. So you can adjust to sing classical and you can adjust to sing musical theater. I think you can honestly do both. And it's fun to do both, but a lot of teachers are very rigid, again, and for some reason do not want to teach musical theater, and I just don't agree with that.
Now, have you ever performed?
Well, my first role in high school was musical theater, and I was Marion Peru in The Music Man. I danced very
Madam
poorly.
Librarian. You've what? Danced very poorly?
I danced poorly.
I don't believe
I'm,
that.
I'm a mover.
I don't believe that. Well, we've talked about that on this show quite often. Music Man is coming back to Broadway.
That's what I heard. I'm excited.
Sutton Foster and the Hugh.
Oh,
and
gosh.
The Hugh Jackman.
The Wolverine is going to play Professor Harold Hill.
Rawr, even he won't make that musical better for me.
Oh, I like that. Oh, bite your tongue.
I'm still going. I already have tickets.
What about Gary, Indiana?
I've never missed. I've never missed Hugh Jackman. I think he's brilliant. I don't like that musical. I love Shapoopy. I think the song Shapoopy is phenomenal. I just don't like that musical. I like Robert Preston. I just don't like that musical.
I didn't like it when I was growing up. But
in the microphone.
I didn't like it when I was growing up, but then after watching the TV Matthew Broderick Christian Chenoweth.
I remember that. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love it. It's
Listen, Sarah Hugh Jessica couldn't Parker. Even make Oklahoma better Sarah for me. Parker. And I love Oklahoma. Hugh Jackman, but he couldn't. It's not going to happen, but that's okay.
Well, okay. So I think we've hit the Music Man thing. That's good.
But that's okay. Isla's a great musical.
And Little Ronnie Howard.
Little Ronnie Howard. Little
Amaryllis.
Yeah.
Yes, I was like, the lisp. Yeah.
Of course, that's the movie. I don't think he was on stage with it.
I tell you, Shirley Jones and Robert Preston. That was it for me. I wore that vinyl out as a kid.
I actually still have the one I had, the album that I had as a kid. Yeah,
you
that's
know what?
It.
I think
and
we
here's
may
my
still
ignorance.
Have our vinyl of Music Man.
Yeah, what?
I said I may still have the vinyl of Music Man.
Carrie,
too.
What was your first musical, or what was your first theater experience?
Well, one of my, I think like my first sort of official in high school, which is still my favorite musical of all times, is Sweet Charity.
Mine too. It's fraught with
women
issues on it, but I still think it's the greatest musical ever.
Yeah. No,
it's got a bad message at the end.
Yeah.
But the music is great. Love it.
I love it.
Did you play in it?
I did. I've done it twice, and I'm moving my way up to Charity or Nikki. That's one of my future roles. When I was in high school, I was chorus because I was still a little bit shy. Can you imagine me shy?
I fell in love with Bebe Neuwirth before anyone knew who Bebe Neuwirth was. She was in the 84 revival with Debbie Allen when Bob Fosse passed away working on it. Yeah. And she played Nikki. And no one knew who she was then. And I'm like, who is this woman up there? Yeah.
That's such a great role.
She said that. She went down right in front of the orchestra pit, turned to the whole audience, said, who is that woman down there? Bebe Neuwirth peered away from the stage left wings and said, it's just little old me.
It's just me.
So I forgot to ask, and I should say that Sharon has left, and Brian is graciously
signing,
and
so
gracefully,
so that Sandra May can understand what we're saying. But I did. Where did you grow up, Sandra?
Louisville, Kentucky.
And Ellie, where did you grow up?
Dallas, Texas. Dallas,
Big T, Mayo, yes, and Carrie.
Southern California, OC.
Everybody, we spanned the U.S. today.
And Brian, where did you grow up?
I grew up, I tell people Columbus, Ohio. I was born in Youngstown, Ohio.
Oh.
But I graduated from Columbus, so I tell people Columbus.
My very dear friend Maria Constantino is from Youngstown. And I played Youngstown in the little theater there, big theater there. So, Brian, what's your story? How did you find yourself in theater? Did Sandra fish you into theater, or did you just find it on your own?
It's just they're arguing over what the true story is going to be.
It's a long story, a little happy, a little sad. When I was in middle school, I was bullied every day because I was gay, had long hair, so every day I was bullied. It got pretty dark. My family decided we're going to move to a different city. So all those awful, awful, depressing plans that I had, I put them on hold. We moved to Columbus, Ohio. But it sucked because it was in the middle of freshman year. It was like February, March, so everybody already had their friends.
It's a weird, yeah.
Yeah.
I moved in a mid-school year, like right before my senior year in a different state. It's a weird. Now imagine
you're hard of hearing and you're shy because you're hard of hearing and you don't want to speak up because you're worried people will think you're like stupid because you might say the wrong thing. That was me.
Yeah.
But I joined the theater department to try to make friends. My first day in the drama club, this blonde girl with big boobs runs up to me, throws her arms around me and hugs me and says, you forgot to hug me. And I was like, that's because I don't know you. She's like, well, my name's Kelly. I'm like, oh, my name's Brian. She's like, well, now we know each other, so we're friends.
Where's the hug?
And from that point on, I had friends. I had a social life. We had parties, everything. My life did a whole 360 change. And ever since then, I actually basically credit theater to saving my life.
Oh, awesome. Well, that's a great story. Are you still friends with Kelly?
Yes, actually. She just moved to Austin about
2 years
ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
From Columbus?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
That's an incredible story. Well, I hope she's coming to see Next to Normal.
I hope so, too. I will be sending it out to her. But after that, ran theater company in Ohio, went to Gallaudet, met Sandra, did deaf theater there, because all along I've been hard of hearing, so just very, very oral. So I would speak everything. But then learning ESL, I was about 25 when I started to learn. Went to Gallaudet, moved to Austin.
I have a question. How long would it take someone to typically learn ASL?
It varies. Some people learn fast, some slow. It depends on the person. People who have a dance background or a theater background are more likely to pick it up faster. Mm. But again, it varies. That's from Sandra. Studies show to become maybe conversationally, socially fluent, about 2 to 3 years. To become fully fluent, where maybe you could actually get up and sign without relying on your hearing or interpret something, a good 5 to 7 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like almost learning Japanese with the multiple thousands of characters to be proficient. That's
well, they interesting. They say it is one of the hardest languages to learn. When I started to study ASL, which sort of filtered out, but when you're reading about it, they say there's a matrix of languages that are difficult to learn, and along with Japanese is ASL. I think it's up at the same ranking in terms of difficulty.
Well, if I can learn Japanese, I can learn ASL.
Yes. There you go.
Sandra. ASL is American Sign Language. Other countries actually have their own.
Right. I know.
Like Japan has their own Japanese Sign Language. So
you have to sign in symbols.
What's that?
You have to sign in symbols. Anyway, we are plumb out of time. Thank you guys all for coming.
You just made
all
of us laugh.
I will say that here backstage at Offstage, we don't have the same rules that we had in the air, gosh. But I need to tell everybody they have to go see Next to Normal. It's incredible. We are already sold out for the first weekend. So
I already have my tickets for Friday night.
So this is something you're going to want to see. I don't know that you'll get an opportunity to see anything of this nature in the city of Austin for a while.
Does it mean Ellie can start cussing
yes.
now?
Yes, come.
We can kind of cuss.
I was going to say, if you miss this show with the F word in front of it, then you're really missing out. You need to be there or you're going to be square.
You are going to be square. Well, thank you.
And don't look it up. Don't find out anything about it. Just come let it unfold itself in front of you. That's what you need.
There you go. All right. You heard it right here. We're going to go back into the theater because we have more work to do in there. So thanks for joining us backstage.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Io rimedi
non ho, ma uno son certo che c'è. Sarò perfetto per te, ed io perfetta per te, perfetta.